Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo and this is An Hour of Mind Power. This show is dedicated to informing and educating, motivating, inspiring you. And today's subject matter is a significant one. We're going to be talking about complementary and alternative cancer therapies. There is not a person around that has not known of someone that's been afflicted with some kind of cancer. And in today's world, there's a lot more that we have available in the way of choices, but we need sometimes to have a form of educated information that allows us to be aware of those choices. My guest today is Dr. David Rosenthal. We're going to be talking about the American Cancer Society's complete guide to complementary and alternative cancer therapies. Dr. Rosenthal, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I really was quite excited when I got this book, although I will have to say the postage on this was hefty as well as the weight of it. I mean, you could use this as a booster seat for one of your kids if you wanted to. It's quite thick. However, in today's world, there is a phenomenal wave on the part of people to spend money on alternative treatment methods. And in 1997, there's a number given in the book, and this is in 97, that $36 to $47 billion, that's the big B, was spent on complementary and alternative treatment methods during 1997. Dr. Rosenthal, what made you decide to sort of step outside the boundaries and paradigms of the conventional medical thinking? Why did this become significant to you as a physician?
Well, it's not a long story, Donna. I had some very good mentors back when I was in my training. They taught me there was more to taking care of a patient with cancer than just giving chemotherapy, than giving radiation therapy or putting them through surgery. That there was a lot more to just holding a patient, talking to them, giving them the support they needed while they were going through the conventional cancer therapies. And when I was first involved with the American Cancer Society, they asked me to be on a committee. And this was back in the 70s, and the committee was the Committee on the Study of Quackery. So this is the American Cancer Society has come a long way since then. We no longer have a committee of quackery. We do have an advisory committee on the use of complementary and alternative methods of therapy.
Well, I'm excited to see this. In the work that I do, I come across so many people from different cultural environments. And in every single culture around the planet, there are things that have been acquired in the way of knowledge that finally, in our thinking, we're saying maybe we ought to explore some of this. And there's a number of these different modalities that are presented in this book. And I really, I had to chuckle when you say, Donna, you mean you read the whole book? No, I didn't read the whole book.
For people who don't know, it's 900 pages.
That's right.
And not your typical bedtime reading.
Correct, although it's a very interesting reading. I will say that there are so many benefits to what I call cross-cultural education to find out why certain things work. And, of course, we're reaching a point in medicine more and more where we're beginning to evaluate people on an individual basis because everyone's physiology, though we may have certain commonalities, there are those differentials that may make one thing work more effectively than something else. What's one man's candy is another man's poison, I guess, as you could say. So let's talk about some of this. Define complementary and alternative for those in my audience that may have a few gray areas of thought about this. What's the difference?
Right. Well, I think it's very important to distinguish between complementary and between alternative methods of therapy. unfortunately, the terms usually don't belong together. They are extreme opposites. Complementary means together with or alongside conventional therapy, mm-hmm. whereas alternative means instead of conventional therapy. Complementary therapies involve the use of many types of mind, body, spirit, herbs, vitamins, minerals, diet, nutrition, some pharmacological, biological treatments. But within the complementary therapy, there is a great deal of evidence-based practice. In other words, many of the complementary therapies work to improve quality of life. On the other hand, alternative, instead of conventional therapy, can be very difficult and unorthodox and could be a significant problem because it can have many toxic side effects. It can obviously delay the use of a curative type of therapy and is unproven. No one has proven that these alternative therapies actually work. So the basic difference between the two is significant. And what we're trying to do at this present time is to divorce the two terms. And eventually what we're going to see is a different type of terminology, one that's called integrative oncology or integrative cancer treatments. And as you pointed out before, it's really combining the best of Eastern medicine with the best of Western medicine.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Now, I want my audience to know that you're a Harvard professor of medicine and medical director of the Leonard P. Zacham Center for Integrative Therapies at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. So this is a very significant part of your environment. I strongly believe the more we can become educated about various things, and these are always going to be changing, because look at where we were 200 years ago, and look at where we are today. And a lot of these changes are being made possible in the area of understanding, and this is my bias, due to the advancement of certain levels of technological development that have enabled us to go further in our evaluations and assessments than we've ever been able to do before.
That's right, and really it's not only assessment of the technology, it's also an assessment of what people were doing and what was actually helping people outside the hospital with their quality of life. Mm-hmm. We learned when we opened our doors at the Zacham Center for Integrative Therapies in the Dana-Farber 10 years ago that acupuncture, massage, Reiki, music therapy, all of these were really significantly helping the cancer patients, but they were all doing it in the outside of the hospital setting. Leonard P. Zacham, who was the head of the Anti-Defamation League here in New England, had a fatal disease called multiple myeloma. And he was a very powerful person, and he went to the president and CEO of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute at the time and said, "Look, you're treating me with the best therapy there is in the entire country. I had an autologous transplant. I had the best and newest types of therapy for multiple myeloma. But you know what? You're not treating me as a whole human being. I have to go here for my acupuncture. I have to go here for my massage therapy. And those things really help my pain, alleviate my discomfort, and improve my quality of life." Well, coming from a very powerful person like that, it raised the president's specter. He got a committee informed, task force, and the ultimate result was the opening of the Leonard P. Zacham Center for Integrative Therapies 10 years ago at the Dana-Farber. A real tremendous event where we started opening up our services in the center for acupuncture, massage, Reiki, music therapy, modified exercise programs like restorative yoga and Qigong, those types of things which really have helped people along the
mm-hmm.
therapies.
Yes, and I think it's wonderful that there has been that opening up to it. Because as you say, you've got to treat the whole person. Just treating a symptom sometimes doesn't work. So being able to work with a whole package really makes a big difference. And I think it actually is an advantage for a physician. So it's a real shift in thinking. And how has this affected the training in medical schools? I mean, are medical schools beginning to integrate this into their training? Nutrition, which we found, I mean, goodness gracious, it's always been important, but It's something we've become more and more aware of, its value. Has this been advanced in the training for medical students?
Gradually, Donna, gradually. I think that when I first told people about the center and what we were doing, a lot of my colleagues looked at me askance and said, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this?" And gradually they have become believers as they've seen what has happened to their patients. So the doctors, my colleagues, have gradually come on board, and I now get quite a few consults from my colleagues at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. I think as far as the medical schools are concerned, this has become an important aspect of a number of medical schools that are beginning their training. And as, for example, at Harvard Medical School, Dr. David Eisenberg has established a center, a division, for research and education in complementary and integrative therapies. And it covers the whole ballpark about trying to incorporate into case studies at Harvard Medical School the use of things like acupuncture, the use of things like modified exercise programs, the mind-body techniques, and how these affect people and how they can improve and reduce their symptoms.
In this book, you also go through the history of drug regulation in the United States, botanicals as medicines, dietary supplementation, which just about everybody I know of is a strong believer in, and quality control. Tell us what is happening relative to nutritional supplementation so that people will know if they go to get something like vitamin E or vitamin C, that it's actually going to be what's on the package, because that's been one of the biggest complaints I've been aware of for years. People say, well, if I go and I buy this product, what guarantees the fact that what it says on the bottle is what I'm going to be getting?
That's a very important point, Donna. I think that in this day and age, the over-the-counter food supplements, the vitamin supplements, herbs, botanicals, are not under FDA or FTC regulation. So we have to assume that what they put on the package is correct. But what we have found out that in some of the analyses of various types of products, what we buy today may not be the same thing that we'll get in the same product a month from now.
Mm-hmm.
And so doing research on some of these products has been very difficult. There is this eight herbal compound called PCSPES, Prostate Cancer Hope. And it was an eight herbal compound that you could get. It wasn't inexpensive, but a lot of the prostate cancer men found that their markers for prostate cancer were improving without any therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got some investigators involved and some scientists and some internists in oncology. And they looked at the product and they said, oh, okay, well, we'll analyze it. No hormones in it, so it couldn't be estrogen that's doing this. It must be something else, so let's do a study. And they finally got a grant from the National Cancer Institute for well over $1 million and started to randomize prostate cancer men, some getting the PCSPES and some just being observed. And that's when trouble began, because they began to see in the people getting the PCSPES side effects, like breast engorgement, and in some people, bruising. Well, why do you get breast engorgement? Because there was estrogen in some of the products.
Mm-hmm.
And in other products, there wasn't estrogen, but there was dicumarol derivatives, which is an anticoagulant.
Mm-hmm.
So there were contaminants and also hormone products, which obviously does help prostate cancer. So the study, unfortunately, had to be stopped, $1 million thrown out the window for this research study, and the company that was making the PCSPES had to close down and reevaluate itself. So a lot of people are beginning to find out, how do we study these products if they're not going to be the same?
Mm-hmm.
How do we study herbs? And so many people are trying to fractionate the products into their individual proteins and then testing them against tumor cells in culture, and then adding one product and then adding another product to see what the type of cell kill will be. And that's sort of demystifying herbs and demystifying botanicals into their biological products. Because we know that, where do we get our best chemotherapy agents from? Where do we get some of our best pharmaceutical agents from? From plants? From the box of trees? from herbs, but they're single products. They're isolated individual proteins.
And so many times when you have things like wheatgrass, components, natural components, they're really quite complex in many of their properties, and dependent on what soil they've been grown in, what the environment is, all of these components come into play with the pharmacological benefits or the nutritional benefits, that whatever it might be. And that is where I think there's really a lot of difficulty, because there's not going to be that control.
That's correct. And, you know, I think that the issue is also the interactions of these over-the-counter products with conventional therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Nutritional research is still in its infancy. We're learning more and more about the importance of various products like the omega-3 fatty acids, learning more and more about the importance of vitamin D mm-hmm. in our diets. We now know that it's very important to look at the interactions of antioxidants with radiation therapy or antioxidants with chemotherapy. The when you're getting radiation therapy for a tumor, which is very sensitive to the X-ray therapy, if you're on an antioxidant, antioxidants act against radiation therapy at the cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could very well be that you're inactivating the radiation effect. Similarly, with various types of chemotherapy, this may be also important. So a radiation therapist, when someone is undergoing radiation therapy for cancer, the mm-hmm. radiation therapist will tell them to stop their over-the-counter antioxidants. But there are so many ways that that can be counteracted by a good diet.
Mm-hmm.
And so diet and nutrition is very important, especially the diet of fruits and vegetables.
Let's talk about cancer for a moment, because I think it was a real eye-opener for me many years ago. When people hear the term cancer, they are not aware, honestly, of the fact that there literally are hundreds of cancers. Am I correct?
That's correct. Every cancer is an individual cancer. Cancer of the lung is different from cancer of the pancreas, is different from leukemia, or different from multiple myeloma.
So you have, the list goes on ad infinitum. I remember once when I went in for a mammogram, I was just talking to the technician, and they said, they had 200 and some odd types of breast cancers that they knew of at that time. That was a number of years ago, and I said, holy Joseph, nobody ever talks about this, that there are all of these different types, and it's been around as far as we know. But I want to ask you a question a little bit different. What do you think has caused this tremendous, tremendous growth of cancer that we have seen? I mean, there's multiple types. But do you think it's because we've become more educated? Because it has always been around. Cancer is nothing new. The Arabs wrote about it centuries ago. So why do you think that it is so significantly being demonstrated in today's world, in today's lifestyle?
Well, I think one of the important things that's happened due to the American Cancer Society and other organizations is detection, early detection, to find cancers at their very earliest stage. Like prostate cancer and early breast cancer can be found at a very early stage. Colon cancer can be found even before it becomes cancer now,
mm-hmm.
When you find on a colonoscopy an adenomatous polyp. If we look at the overall incidence of cancer, Donna, I think it's fairly stable at the present time. It's sort of plateaued. I think that the issue in increasing incidence is also that over the past 15 to 20 years, cancer has come, the diagnosis has come out of the closet. People didn't talk about their cancers. People didn't publicly announce that they had cancer. Look at the number of politicians who have said that they have cancer, whether it's of the breast or whether it's the prostate. We have a recent senator from Connecticut who talked about his prostate cancer, and then we had a Supreme Court justice who talked about her cancers. So we have a number of people who are actually getting out there and telling people and educating people, because they develop cancer, what other people can do to reduce their risk and also to pick up cancers at their early stage. So we're talking more about it. I think that the subtypes of cancer are also increasing, and I think you're probably, unfortunately, going to hear more about various subtypes. And that's because of the genetics that is currently being done on cancer. Mm-hmm. Not that we totally inherit a cancer, but we acquire genetic abnormalities that define a cancer so that we can subdivide them and also find ways of treating them with genetic-based therapies, gene therapies. So this is another new field. So we'll see cancers being broken down not only in their cell type, but their immunological type, mm-hmm. how they respond to the immune system, and also their genes, their genetics, their chromosomal abnormalities that they acquire.
Who would ever have thought, you know, sort of like, an H.G. Wells special. This is something, or Star Trek special. This is what we're evolving into, which I think is utterly fascinating. Let's talk about a particular method of therapy, the Ayurveda. And this is centuries old. This is mentioned in the book. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Ayurvedic medicine is an ancient Indian system of medicine. And it's really ancient as far as India. It's already been down for many millennia. It follows an integrated approach to the prevention and treatment of illness and tries to maintain or reestablish harmony between the mind, body, and forces of nature. And so it combines a number of approaches. It does recommend a change in lifestyle. It does recommend exercise, nutritional changes, meditation, and also some herbal remedies that purify the body and mind and increase spiritual awareness. So it's a total concept of one of the several ancient Asian healing systems that have gained popularity in the West. Now, while the effectiveness of many aspects of Ayurvedic medicine have not been scientifically proven, early research suggests that certain components may offer some potential therapeutic value.
You bring up acupuncture. You've got a number of different things. You even go into Native American healing in the book. And with my listeners, I want them to know that you have it categorized by description, an overview. How is it used? What does it involve? And I think, you know, what's the history and so on and so forth. What I like about this book, even though it's regarding cancer, the cancer therapies, et cetera, there is so much that can be applied into so many different areas. And I think when you're dealing with various cultures and various thought processes, I would imagine as a physician, this really empowers the physician, if he has the time to do this, to study these different modalities to be able to communicate effectively, more effectively, with some patients, depending on their cultural background.
Absolutely. Not only does it empower the clinician, the primary thing is it empowers the member, the client, the patient, and to helping them be part of their therapy. They're participating by doing, by meditating, by getting acupuncture or massage, or participating in a meditation program and learning how to do the relaxation response, decreasing their anxiety and stress as they deal with their cancer. I think that, you know, acupuncture is one of the integrative therapies that is probably undervalued. We now have a great deal of scientific evidence that acupuncture helps with chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. It's also been shown to reduce cancer pain in randomized clinical trials, controlled studies. And also it's been shown to be helpful in cancer-related fatigue and insomnia and other areas of symptoms, such as even xerostomia, which is dry mouth due to radiation therapy.
Well, and then you've got light therapy in the book. I mean, you've got so many. There's moxibustion. Now,
right.
This really was fascinating to me because I've known of someone that had this done to them, and it just was, it was miraculous in their eyes. But there's a lot of information about this. This is something from Asia. Am I correct in my assessment of this, or are there other cultures that use moxibustion, and what is it, so my listeners will know what it is?
Moxibustion is the application of heat resulting from the burning of a small bundle of tightly bound herbs, or what we call moxa, to targeted acupoints. So it's used alongside of acupuncture. And I think the moxibustion, when someone has the treatment, they'll get an accentuated, it's felt that in some cases people get a more accentuated sense of qi from the acupuncture with the moxibustion than they did with the acupuncture alone. But this is something that's being studied actually at the present time.
Well, it's fascinating because I remember this friend of ours climbing up 10,001 steps to go to some particular place in China, some special shrine or whatever it was, and he couldn't function, and they had these little huts along the way, the stairwell, stairway that went up, because there are these thousands and thousands of steps you have to climb. And they had what they had their medical practitioners, maybe they were physicians, in these little huts, and they used something like this, and this man could not even walk. He couldn't move another step. They did this with him, and he said it was amazing. Within a minute, all of the stress and tension in the muscles was gone, and he said it didn't come back. He said he was able to complete the other 10,000 steps he had to go to get to the
good,
top of wherever what he was
him.
Climbing.
Well, there are lots of stories like that, and the idea is to what I caution everybody to when you hear something like that is something that the director of the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine once told me. He said the plural of anecdote is not evidence. And so these are the kinds of pieces of anecdotes that you want to make into evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Can you prove that by doing some studies in a larger number of patients, a larger number of people out there who have a symptom, to see whether it helps? And that's the kind of thing that in the Western world, what we're doing is teaching the Eastern world how to do research on acupuncture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we went to a conference in China, and actually we're teaching the Chinese how to do acupuncture research. They're great at acupuncture, and they have all sorts of feelings that they're benefiting people, but there's a lot to the what we call the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it just paying more attention to a patient that's helping them, relaxing them, giving them a sense of trust, that's what we have to try and distinguish. And we're beginning to show that there is actual evidence that the acupuncture does improve symptomatology.
Orthomolecular medicine. Now, I know we just have a little bit of time left here, but this is your mega vitamin, mega mineral therapy, nutritional medicine. They're really making some big breakthroughs in orthomolecular medicine. If someone wanted to get a good evaluation of their nutritional needs, if they wanted to do something, what would you recommend that they do? If we took a position of we wanted to maintain wellness, we took this preventative type of stance, what would you recommend that they do?
Well, I think that it's first find out what their nutrition is like in the beginning. As you know, the nutrition in the United States is not very good at all. And I think the thing is to do is first step, before you go to something like orthomolecular medicine, which is the use of high doses of vitamins, mineral, or hormones to try to prevent or treat a wide variety of conditions, I think one needs to look at what our nutrition is generally. What are we eating? And what the whole food pyramid, Donna, has changed.
Mm-hmm.
The food pyramid has been turned upside down. At the foundation right now are phytonutrients, the use of fruits and vegetables. And in the United States, our kids are 1.5 to 2 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Adults may be a little bit better, maybe 3 to 3.5. But what the diet is in Asia is close to 10 to 20 servings mm-hmm. of fruits and vegetables a day. Up until recently, they didn't hear of breast cancer in China. Until what's happened now more recently in the big cities in Shanghai and Beijing, they're beginning to see skyrocketing instances of breast cancer and colorectal cancer, primarily
mm-hmm.
because of a change in nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that we've got to turn that food pyramid upside down. Phytonutrients has to be at the foundation. The meat, dairy products, and refined sugars should be used sparingly. And alongside of the phytonutrients, we should be consuming the right fatty acids, the omega-3 fatty acids. Fish is a very good source of the omega-3s. So I think that, you know, before you go to orthomolecular medicine, which is not proven yet, there are studies that are testing out high doses of vitamin C, for example. But until we change the overall diet of United States citizens, I think we should really look at that first.
Well, Dr. Rosenthal, this has been an absolute delight having you as a guest today. I so appreciate your being with me. For those of you listening, the American Cancer Society has this new book, The Complete Guide to Complementary and Alternative Cancer Therapies. Mind-body-spirit techniques, herbs, vitamins, minerals, your diet, nutrition, manual healing, physical touch, pharmacologic, biological therapies, all of these things, it gives you something to think about, something to be aware of, so that you can, in my mind's view, take a preventative positioning. But educating yourself is important. Dr. Rosenthal, you said that cancer.org is the website, and that they then can find the tab to get more information on this publication. It is called CAM,
just Complementary and Alternative Medicine. So okay. CAM, and you'll come up to a website page which will talk about complementary and alternative therapies. And from there, you can punch in Ayurveda, traditional Chinese medicine, vitamin C, vitamin D, anything you want, and you'll get the answers of what the evidence is of efficacy, ineffectiveness or effectiveness, and safety or toxicity. That's how I recommend my decisions.
Thank you. Dr. Rosenthal, again, it's been a delight having you as a guest. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, it's a complete guide to complementary and alternative cancer therapies. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hip, hip, huzzah! My lords and ladies, come one, come all, to the 11th annual Washington Renaissance Fair at Mara's Farms in Buckley, Washington, during the first 3 weekends in August, beginning August 1st. Bring family and friends to become part of the excitement, cheering for your favorite knight as he jousts for noble causes. Gain an audience with Her Majesty the Queen as she knights young lords and ladies, or enjoy a tankard of ale and a turkey leg experiencing the wonders of the Renaissance.
Live the legend!
Gates open 10 o'clock.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you would like to chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. By the way, we have one toll-free number you can call in to, 888. This is from anywhere in the world, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, if you're a first-time listener, I want to welcome you to the Donna Sebo Show. And I want to say all you need to do when you call in, if you've not done it before, when you call in, just give me your first name or your initial. Of course, I love to know where you're calling from. And I want to mention again, I want if the listener that had called me regarding a free ticket to the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair last weekend, for those of you in Washington, Benjamin Bogavi, if you or a friend of yours is hearing this, please call my office. I have your ticket. I need to get it to you. That's 800-872-8852. That's my office number, 800-872-8852, and I'll get to you. We have one ticket left. This is a free family pass to the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. So if anyone in Western Washington that's listening to the show today would like to get that free pass, I want to get it to you as quickly as possible. This is the last weekend coming up. This is a marvelous, marvelous event. So do call me at my office, 800-872-8852, so that I can get your name and your contact information and pop it in the mail. This
Hello?
Is Donna Sebo. We're going to take our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
My name is Sherry. I'm calling from Carmel, California.
Oh, beautiful community, Sherry.
It is indeed.
Oh, it's so magical when you go into Carmel. Oh,
it is.
Great.
I love it.
Oh, have you lived there for very long?
I have. Well, I've lived in Pacific Grove, which is right over the hill. I raised my children there and then moved to Carmel about 6 years ago. So I've had the best of everything, really.
Oh, I think so. Carmel is just magical. For any of you listening, if you ever have a chance to visit that part of California, make sure you have your camera in hand, because you'll have sometimes these foggy mists in the morning, and they just sort of settle in the trees, creating this ethereal, surreal type of what I call visual portraiture of nature that is just magical.
That's very well put.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It's very true. It really paints the picture.
Oh, it is just awesome there. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Well, let's get down to business with you, Sherry. The first thing I am looking at is I want you to stop sweating bullets over money. I think you came in sweating bullets over money. I think even when you're just part of your package. You need to make it okay that you are going to do quite well. You're going to be able to have everything that you need and then some. But there is a side of knowledge that you do need to educate yourself about relative to money and leveraging it. So this is an area of education that you can easily learn and work with. And don't be scared off by all the commotion that goes on. You know, good common sense goes a long way. And as it's always been said, cash talks. So what you want to do, I'd say for the next 3 years, try to save as much cash as you possibly can. And then look at those arenas that you would be comfortable leveraging your money within. And that will enable you to make some choices, and one of those choices may involve real estate. And I use the term may, because you will need to decide on how you would want to leverage your money through real estate. But there are many options that you can work with, and you just need to know you're going to get past that. Now, something that's bothering me with you right at the moment is that I am concerned about your digestive process. I'm not seeing you enjoying food. And when I say that, it doesn't mean that you don't like food. It means that once you eat, the body is giving you some problems. And I would like for you to do some of your own homework and see what you can do about increasing the enzymatic properties within your body that will help your food digest more comfortably. So you might want to explore enzymes just to see if that will help you. Because I'm seeing you sometimes choosing not to eat because you get concerned that it's not going to sit well. So you need to do some homework on yourself physically. You need to find out when your body is most sensitive to discomfort. Is it in the morning? Is it in the evening? And what is it? If you have a whole bunch of liquid, let's say you're like me, you drink a pot of tea in the morning, and you say, well, that's great, but I just feel like I'm sloshing, my food isn't digesting, or I'm burping, or something like this. Maybe you just need to cut down on the amount of liquid that you would take in. Now, that's simplistic, but I think you can get the idea.
I do.
Be interested in yourself. Don't compare yourself with anybody else. Be interested in yourself and watch what your body does. See how it is responding, and you will be able to assess how you can change your food patterning so you won't have this discomfort. Do you have a question for me?
I'm just trying to digest everything you just said, which you were right about my digestive process. That's very true. I think I will tune in and be a little more sensitive about it. And you were also right about the money thing, and I agree, I probably came into this world with that kind of problem. But I am in the process of just really releasing it and trusting more instead of having to provide, feel that I have to do it all myself.
Really a good attitude, but also take the positioning of educating yourself so that you can understand what your options are, that you're not stuck.
Yes, that's it right there. Understanding my options and feeling not stuck. That kind of hits it on the head right there. I'm just wondering, in the next few years, do you see me moving forward with this and being able to get past it?
Oh, yes. You're going to be able to get past it. It's like anything else. When we become aware that we're in charge of certain things, and mainly our attitudes, you know, life happens. We can't control everything in life. But when we do what you're trying to do, and that is, I should not use the word trying, what you are actively wanting to do and get a result for or with, is releasing, doing what you can and releasing so that you don't stress yourself over what you're not able to control. And that is a huge, huge step. That's a big step. And I know it's taken me a lot of years, and I can't say that I'm there yet, but the two things, trust and release. Boy, that can be a challenge.
It is for me personally, but I'm really committed to it, and I've dipped my toes in enough to know that this is really what I need to do, and I wouldn't be happy not doing it, trusting.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah. So I think the process has started, and I so appreciate your input because I think it's confirmation for me that
Wonderful.
I'm really on the right path and pursuing the right thing, and that what I know inside of myself is that I will really be taken care of is true. That is truth.
That is marvelous. You're to be complimented, and thank you for calling. How'd you learn about the show?
Oh, my neighbor told me about you. He listens, and he called in, and he suggested that I do it, and I'm very happy I did.
Well, so, I'm delighted. Welcome.
Thank you so very much for your input. Much appreciated.
Oh, you're more than welcome, and pass the word. Pass it
I
on.
I will. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome, Sherry. Enjoy your summer. This is Donna
Sebo,
and I know we're going to be going on a break tomorrow. We are going to be interviewing Brian Herbert. He is the author of The Winds of Dune. If you're a science fiction lover and you, like me, loved the movie Dune, well, you must hear about this additional sequel, The Winds of Dune. Brian is the son of the original author of Dune. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, We're going to have more good things to share. And you can also call me, 888-815-9756. And, hey, get that pad of paper and pen ready. Have I got a chocolate recipe for you. Yum. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hip huzzah!
My lords and ladies, come one, come all, to the 11th annual Washington Renaissance Fair at Mayor's Farms in Buckley, Washington, during the first three weekends in August, beginning August 1st. Bring family and friends to become part of the excitement, cheering for your favorite knight as he jousts for noble causes. Gain an audience with Her Majesty the Queen as she knights young lords and ladies, or enjoy a tankard of ale and a turkey leg experiencing the wonders of the Renaissance.
Live the legend!
Gates open 10 o'clock.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Remember, all I need is your first name or your initial, and then after that, sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question if you like. Don't forget, if you're in Western Washington, I have one free family pass left for the last weekend of the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. We had maybe as many as 30,000 people that came out last weekend, and we're probably going to have more because the weather is going to be glorious. So give me a call at my office if you'd like that free pass, 800-872-8852. Okay, have you got that pad of paper and pen handy? I've got a recipe here for a chocolate and orange cake. Now, I don't know if you've ever tasted chocolate and orange together. There used to be an ice cream. It was my absolute favorite. It was an orange ice cream with wonderfully rich chocolate bits in it, and these were nice big chunks of dark chocolate. Oh, it was great. We'd make a special trip about every week just to go down to get it. Well, they don't have it out anymore, but this is a cake that if you want to tickle the taste buds of anybody who comes to visit you, you're going to want to fix this. It's so easy. Here are the ingredients. You're going to need 3/4 cup of superfine sugar. 3/4 cup of superfine sugar. You're going to need 3/4 cup of butter. 3/4 cup of butter. You need 3 eggs, and they should be well beaten and at room temperature. All the ingredients should be at room temperature, by the way. You need 1.5 cups of self-rising flour, and you want to sift it. You want to measure it, then sift it. You need then 2 tablespoons of unsweetened cocoa sifted. Use the good stuff if you're going to use it. Don't buy the cheapy stuff. Use the good stuff. It just makes such a difference. And 2 tablespoons of milk, 2 tablespoons of milk, 3 tablespoons of orange juice, 3 tablespoons of orange juice, and the grated rind of 1/2 of a large orange. And then there's a frosting, and this is a very, very thin frosting. You're going to need 1 cup of confectionery sugar and 2 tablespoons of orange juice. Now, here is what you do. You're going to need a deep 8-inch round cake pan, That's right. This isn't going to be a gigantic cake, but it's going to be a flavorful cake. You're going to beat together your sugar and butter in a bowl until it's light and fluffy, and gradually add the eggs one at a time, beating them well after each addition, and then you very carefully fold in the flour. So if you want to use the mixer for beating the eggs and the sugar and the butter and all that kind of good stuff. But when you're finished with that, you fold in the flour. Get yourself a nice large spatula and fold it in. Then you divide the mixture in half, and you add the unsweetened cocoa and milk to one half of your batter, stirring until it's combined. And then the other half, you use your orange juice and orange rind. Now you spoon each mixture into the prepared pan, and you swirl it together with a toothpick to create a marbled effect. And then your oven, which should have been preheated to 375 degrees Fahrenheit, you then, once you get that all done, you pop it in your oven for 25 minutes until it's springy to the touch. It should be baked then. Then you allow the cake to cool in the pan for a few minutes before you transfer it to a wire rack to cool completely. Now, to make the frosting, all you need to do is sift the confectionery sugar into a mixing bowl and mix enough of the orange juice to form a smooth frosting. And dependent on the sugar, you might need to add a little bit extra because you want it to be thin enough to spread nicely, because this is not a thick layer of frosting. And you put the frosting over the top of the cake and allow it to set before serving. And if you want to do a little bit of something different, you can add 2 tablespoons of rum or brandy to the chocolate mixture instead of the milk. And you can also just use grated lemon rind and juice if you wanted a different flavor other than orange. You could make it lemon and chocolate. And then if you wanted to have, let's say, a little bit of a chocolate complement on the icing, take really thin, if you have any kind of liquid chocolate, I prefer dark chocolate, but if you do that, then just make little lines and then take a toothpick between the confectionery frosting that you've already put on there that's flavored with those thin stripes of chocolate, and you can make your swirls. It can really look quite attractive, but it's just absolutely delicious. And it's thin slices with this cake. It serves 8 to 10 people, depending on how you slice it. It's wonderful for tea or any time you want something that's that yummy chocolate and orange flavor. Or, as I said, you could use lemon juice and lemon rind if you wanted something a little bit different. Well, this week, what we've got coming up, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Brian Herbert about the new sequel to the sci-fi series Dune, and oh, is it awesome. I've read it cover to cover. I recommend it highly. Brian Herbert is going to be my guest tomorrow. We'll be talking with him. On Thursday, we're going to be talking with Reverend Debbie Doolin, and her book is about The Only Way Out Is In. And then we're going to, on Friday, talk with Tim O'Brien. Tim has been my guest before. He's with Ripley's, believe it or not. They've got a brand new book out. Woo! It's loaded with stuff. You're not going to want to miss it. Seeing is believing. Yes. All of this is documented information. I bet you Ripley himself would be just tickled pink with all of the various things that are now published by Ripley's, believe it or not. He started something so many years ago. Who would have ever guessed that this is still going full blast in today's world as well? Well, I wanted to share something with you too quickly. If you're going to be taking, you still have some time for that summer vacation. Well, lots of times we get concerned if we're traveling that we are going to maybe lose a bag. Well, I came across some tips for traveling that I really thought would great. Send your items. If you're concerned about something getting lost, send your packaged items, if you want, ahead of time to the hotel. Mailing a box through the U.S. Postal Service costs just $13.95 for up to 70 pounds. And if you're going to have an extra bag, you know, some of the airlines are charging anywhere from $15 to $100 for a second bag. And remember, think color. When you are looking for your luggage, attach something to it that is going to make it stand out so you can find it. And there's just so many other little things that I'd want to share, but we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life has a lot to offer. But how do you know if you're going to be able to enjoy any of it if you don't open yourself up to the opportunity? Take an attitude of expectation and know that you will have a chance to enjoy life to the fullest. Be alert, be aware, and go live life with gusto. Donna Sebo here. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.